politics is not about being grateful. It's about unplugging. So, but I think that's is still appropriate because as we approach the holiday season, you know, it's a challenge for many of us because there's so much that's up for us, for many of us, with family and with all the ways in which we seek to honor and celebrate our holidays, regardless of what our traditions are. This can be a stressful time for us, and so to be able to manage our well-being is, I think, important. And it's important, I think, for us to be able to be in our experience, in our life, and not be diminished by what we're having as our life experience. Would you not agree? That's a superpower we should be able to muster, we should be able to have. We should be able to be in our life without feeling diminished by whatever is happening in our experience. To me, that's the experience that I want to have us look at and talk about and co-create. I just want to, first of all, just say a couple things before I get started here, and that is, I had someone come in through the line the last time I spoke, and a person, this woman's come several times, and each time she comes, she's oh, it's Dr. Gary, I just feel so inspired, so connected. I just know that there's something so important that is being talked about here at Unity Spiritual Center. And this woman comes through the line every time and just talks about how blessed she feels to be present to what is unfolding here. And then she whispers in my ear and she says, "I just wish I could understand what you're saying." Apparently, that's not an uncommon sentiment. It's great to begin a talk with opening our hearts and kind of laughing. So I want to begin with a question, though, and it comes from the Art and Practice of Living with Nothing and No One Against You, the Q Process Workshop. How many of you have been through the Q Process program? Okay, you've been through it, and so there's a lot. This is a cornerstone, an integral piece to Unity Spiritual Center, and what we want to everyone in the community to experience, and that is using a tool that enables us to be present to whatever we're having without feeling diminished by it. And we asked this question in the course of the Q Process, that workshop, that how would your life be different if you lived absolutely 100% in integrity with the principle that your life is always for you, that there's nothing ever in any way, shape, or form, anything against you? How would your life be different? Can you think of a way in which your life would be different? Yeah, you'd be happier, maybe. So something would shift, right? And so we affirm every Sunday morning there's one presence and one power active in a work in my life, God the good. And so in a sense, what we're saying is that it's always all for us. But if that's not what we're having, if that's not what our experience gives us, that sense, that felt sense that everything is working for me, if something else is happening, then I'm suggesting that we're in a different dimension than the dimensional place where that fullness of life is. In other words, if we understand Jesus' life and teaching as being a way of us entering into an intentional, conscious relationship to life that he described as the kingdom of God, where in our way of being with what we're having, we unleash what is within us to be unto what we're having, the one, unto our own life. That's our potential, that's our capacity, and we have to awaken that. We have to unleash that. And part of the challenge is that we have to work within the context of our own internal reality, our own internal belief system, our own internal self system. And that becomes an eclipse, that can become a veil to that dimension of ourselves that is infinite and eternal, the dimension of ourself that is sent by God that we can describe as the One, or the Christ, or our divinity, or our higher self, by whatever name we describe that which is moving in us to bring forth a greater good in our life that lives in the context of a world that works for everyone, that is something that is real, that's trying to make its way into our life experience, but it is eclipsed by a veil. It's eclipsed by this, by lack of another word, the matrix, or what Jesus described as the world. And he used a different terminology, and we're using a more modern metaphor. For those of you who've watched the movie The Matrix, how many of you have seen that movie? Okay. It's a part of our cultural lexicon, so to speak, and it's really about looking at a dimension of life that we can describe as programmed. So in other words, there's a part of our way of being with whatever is happening in our life that's programmed or conditioned. Or another way of saying it is when we're unconscious, that we live, when we're unconscious, when we're asleep to that dimension of ourself that is here, sent by God, something else runs us. It's just like we just don't fall asleep. I mean, it's not like we fall asleep and don't have a life. We can have a life and still be unconscious, but what runs us is not something that lives in the context of our greater good. It lives in the context of our survival. And so when that becomes our imperative, the intention out of which we come to whatever we're having, there's a part of our brain that reacts to anything that becomes in any shape or form a threat. And so we become armored, we become hypervigilant about how our life looks and feels, because we believe that it is the source of our well-being or the source of our discomfort, when it's not. The external world is the effect. It's the program. It's what we're compelled to deal with, to conform to manage if we're to have any sense of utility or capacity or power to manage circumstances and conditions in the world. But you see, that's the myth of the matrix, believing that if we just align, conform, give in, take on what is the values of this external environment called our world, that is part of the problem. That's what we're trying to wake up and overcome, is having our life being kind of driven, or we are being kind of compelled to be in our life a certain way. So Deepak Chopra once told a story about how you can train a bunch of fleas. You know those insects that live on your animals? You can train them, put a bunch of fleas into a clear beaker and put a piece of glass on top of it, and the fleas will try to jump out, but they'll hit the ceiling. And then eventually, though, they'll stop. You can take the glass off, but the fleas will never leave, because they have taken on the self-imposed limitation that they were conditioned to experience. He goes on, Deepak Chopra goes on to talk about how elephants are trained. When elephants are very little, they're just tied with a little piece of yarn to a twig, and they're learned how to stay because of that kind of relationship. I'm tied to this, and so I have to stay. But when the elephant grows up, they still do the very same thing, tie a little piece of yarn to a little twig, and the elephant stays because it is surrendered to its self-imposed limitation. And so we in our own lives, there's a term for that. That's called premature cognitive commitments, that we kind of give in to a certain way our life is by virtue of how we've been conditioned to kind of be in our experience of life. And so if we are predominantly conditioned to believe that what is real portrays itself in terms of external appearances and conditions, then we'll look to outside of ourselves for validation of our worth. But if we're conditioned to believe that our well-being arises from within us, if we're conditioned to believe, if we train ourselves to understand that we can decide how we're going to be with what we're having independent of how our life looks and feels, if we know that we can train ourselves to be that capable of being with what we're having out of a place within ourselves that is not driven, but one that is conceived out of the awareness of who we've come here to be, then we need to, if we know that, we need to create a practice as to how to retrain ourselves to be in that way of being, as opposed to succumbing from this environment or this condition that kind of tells us how to be and how to feel and what to think and how to react. And so what I'm describing is a system that is a veil to that dimension of ourself that is spirit and that is capable of being able to be in any life experience without feeling diminished by it. Now, it's important that that be a value that's interesting to us. It's important that we want to know more about how do I be with whatever I'm having and not feel diminished by it. Because if we don't be curious about that possibility, we won't try to exert a different kind of effort when we're feeling small because of what we're having. We'll succumb to that feeling that we don't matter, that we're not good enough, that we're not enough, that we're not okay. But if we realize, no, that's the system, that's the matrix, that's what's running me, that's the belief, that's not the truth. If we recognize that we're caught up in the system, we can recognize that what I'm having is an effect of that. And so I don't have to take it on as if that's the truth of me, but it's something that I need to begin to use. I need to interact with what I'm having as if it's for me. Because if I make the mistake of pushing it away, I'm pushing away the very mechanism that life has brought into my midst that is there to unfold me into a greater expression of the truth of who I am. But I can't do that pushing my life away, pushing what I'm having away, making what I have mean this is against me. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to feel any better just to have that perspective, but you see, that's not the point. The point is not to feel better. The point is to feel what I'm having, because behind my feeling is a belief about myself that's less than whole or complete. Whenever you have an uncomfortable feeling, you can be assured that there's some limiting belief that's behind it. All you have to do is ask the question, what must I believe about myself to have this feeling of inadequacy? What must I believe about myself to have this sense of not enough? And when we begin to be in these questions, we begin to enter into different dimensions of our self system that is not running automatically. In other words, oh, we've arrived at a place where this question hasn't been asked very much before, and now let's look within and see what's there to notice. And what we'll notice when we recognize that we're kind of having a system run us, in other words, having these limiting beliefs kind of be the context around which we bear witness to our life, when we recognize that that's the problem, the problem is that I am caught up in a dimensional out-of-phase shift. I'm out of phase. I'm no longer congruent with or aligned with the energetic field, the dimension of my own beingness that is capable of being unto my life the one sent by God to be the one to make the difference in my particular world. And instead, I feel like I'm a victim of circumstances when I believe that what I'm having is happening to me instead of what I'm having is happening through me. And so what I have in my life is there for me to use, and if I don't use it to unfold the greater good, if I don't use what I'm having to be a way in which I do this deeper, bless you, this deeper integration work, then what I have uses me. I become driven by what I have. And so if in the mere having or not having of something, you can either be completed or defeated, what you have has you and you're in the matrix. And so we have to kind of recover from that. Because until we do, then the way in which our life unfolds is a kind of on automatic pilot. And you know what we call that? Unconscious. When life is running us, we're not conscious. And you know what it's like not to be conscious and have your life still running? It's called driving your car on a long trip. I mean, we do this all the time. We are involved in our life, but we're not present to what's happening. We're somewhere else, in some other place. Well, if we can go some other place, let's go to the place where it really matters. Let's go to that part of that dimension of ourself. If we're going to go to a place, don't go to the place where we have all of these confirmed beliefs about ourselves. Let's go to a place that is real. A dimension of ourself that is real, that is a felt place. It's not made up. It's not about belief. It's about feeling the presence. It's about connecting to what is. And when we're able to do that and bring our conscious awareness to it, and we wake up in that moment, and we awake, and our awareness is not tied to any specific context for which our awareness needs to be in, then what we experience is that what we're having is really for us, because it unleashes what is needed next in our life. You know, you're not finished yet. You still got stuff going on that you need to finish and complete, but the next step in your life can't all the way materialize until you own something that has yet to be owned. And that which is yet to be owned is that dimension of ourself that has been here, that is here sent by God to be unto our life the one to make a difference. And we can't do that work. That can't be our focus if we're reacting to all the things that are happening in the world that are distracting us, believing that what we have is who we are. And so we have to be in the question, who are we really? Because evidently we believe in something else other than believing in ourselves as being lovable, good enough, the one, unlimited, free, empowered, indomitable, unstoppable. Because we don't believe that that's our identity or our truth necessarily, and because we seem to act as if something else is true about ourselves in our life, and we have the behavior and the evidence to prove that on some level our life mirrors a portion of our disconnect, a portion of the error consciousness that we have, the portion of our beliefs that aren't serving us well. Our life mirrors all of that, but to the degree that we can begin to be aware that there is an essence in us that is the truth of us that we need to unfold into whatever is happening in our life, it needs that which is God, that God in us needs to come forth to that. And so let me just take you through this little exercise. I want you to get in touch with who you really are. And you don't have to move around. You don't have to stand up and go anywhere. Just look within yourself and find where you really are. Point to it. Where is it? Okay, so we point to places. Sometimes we will point to our heart. Or we'll think in terms of I am God, or we'll think in terms of some concepts or some thought, but I'm wanting you to sense your essence, which means that there's nothing you're going to be able to actually kind of come up with. It's, oh, I got it, I found it, but it's more a kind of opening within yourself to, it's like the sound of one hand clapping. Who knows what that sounds like? You know, and so what we're doing is we're being in a question that says, I'm wanting to know my true self. What is that? And because there's not going to be any kind of voice that's going to answer that question for you, just what I'm wanting you to experience is just being in that moment where your awareness is just searching the universe for the answer to that question, who am I really? And just sort of allow that, the sensation of that open-ended koan to kind of resonate within you. And there is no answer to that, but I'm wanting you to know that the part of you is searching for that answer is close to being out of the matrix. Okay, so we want to build on that. So think about yourself. Now I want you to think about all the hats that you wear, all the roles that you have. You know, anybody have a hat that you wear or a role? That's a part of our identity, right? It's something that we have. But are your roles or the hats that you wear who you really are? No, it's something that you have. You have the roles, you have the different ways in which you're in your world, and the identities that go along with that. But that's not who you are. But when you forget that that's not who you are and you live as if that's the truth of you, then can you not see how it's possible when you mistakenly believe that you are what you have, like I am my role, then it's possible that I suffer when it's not going so well for me in my role. Can you see how that's possible? Okay, but that's not you, so let's just set that aside. We got to go deeper than that. And let's set aside our roles and our hats. Now let's think about all the things that make us who we are as individuals, like our likes and our dislikes, our preferences, our habits, our addictions, our life patterns, all the things that make us uniquely us. But is that really you also? Or is that just the things that are items of your behavior, the things that you do or the things that people can witness as true for you? But is that the truth of you? Well, the answer is no. That's something that we have. But when we mistakenly believe that what we have is our likes, and then now we have to have things be a certain way in order for us to feel okay. Can we not see that it's a problem when we mistakenly believe ourselves to be those compulsions or those needs or those desires? While we have those things, that's not yet who we really are. But when we confuse ourselves with what we have, we suffer. And then when we take that back even deeper and get in touch with our thoughts and our beliefs, and we recognize that while that's even more subtle, yet those are things we have too. They're not the truth of us, but they can limit us, especially if we believe in them literally. And so we can continue to take this thing all the way back to that place where we're just that awareness of looking out and experiencing ourselves in the context of what we're having. But you see, we don't even experience our what we're having in the context of it. We experience what we're having in the context of who I am. I can only experience what I'm having in my life from my context. And if my context is in separation or is it not enough, then guess what? That's what I project onto what I'm having. Okay, so this is not rocket science. This is just the way things tend to work. Now, we need to recognize that while this is the way things work, it's not good that it works this way, in the sense that it's problematic, in a sense that we can see that what's going on in the world today that's problematic is because we have put too much energy in making what we have so definitive of us. In other words, what I have defines me, but it should not. What you have should not define you. Your cancer, your misfortune, your life situation, even your greater good cannot define you, but if it does define you, that's what the matrix is. And it could be said in another way. It could be said that the matrix is our programming, our conditioning, but it's also the dynamic of our awareness trained to notice what it's having as being its sense of identity and worth. So that's why we have this have, do, be kind of saying. That our tendency is that I have to have things be a certain way in order for me to be able to do what is mine to do, in order for me to feel a sense of okayness or empowerment or well-being. But if what I'm having doesn't enable me to do what I think I need to be doing, then I feel less than. So the have, do, be dynamic is the matrix in a sense, because it compels us to always be paying attention to what we're having as being the definition of our worth or not. And we got to flip that. That's the problem. And so part of the flipping of that is in the recognition that that's part of our work. If we're going to disentangle or unplug from this dynamic of having to have our life be a certain way in order for us to feel okay or safe, in order for us to flip that, where we know that it's up to us to decide how we're going to be with this, because what this is our abundance, and if we don't use it as such, and if we don't use it in the context of gratitude for what it is that we're having, we're going to use it as a means of diminishing ourself. stop doing that. So your choice is to go back to sleep and let your life kind of unfold as it is. It'll still happen. You know, you're only 90% unconscious most of the time. In the morning when you wake up is a brief moment when you're awake, but then when you reacquire your old sense of self, you fall back into sleep, into the matrix again. You may find yourself waking up in parts of your day when you're triggered, but then again, if you're not following that triggering moment back to a limiting belief and then really seeing the opportunity to make a choice to choose to be with what you're having out of a greater mind, if that's not a part of your process, then the matrix becomes the context of how your life is unfolding. But if you choose to awaken up, then the choice, the challenge of that choice is that you have to first become present to and conscious about how your life is automatically unfolding without your permission. That has to happen first. You don't get a better life in the beginning. You have to be present to how your playground got poop in it. I don't know how else to say it. But it just didn't happen by accident. Like, oh, how did that happen? You actually had to step in it, and it had to also be left there. That distracts me. All right. So we have to get to a higher ground. We have to get to a higher place. But unless that becomes a part of our spiritual practice, we won't think about that in a triggering moment. So if someone judges you, you start to react, and you don't think, oh, what did Dr. Gary say about that? So we have to practice before it becomes, you know, absolutely necessary. Because if we don't, absent of a practice of really generating a felt sense of gratitude or appreciation or a sense of feeling free or unlimited, if we aren't in the practice of generating that, then it won't be something that we go to first off. We'll go to it as a last resort. Bless you. So we want to understand that we have to practice the states of being that, bless you. Okay, so I got to tell you something. That this is a missions, we're moving to mission-centric ministry, so that means the minister is not the principal person who blesses everybody. That becomes something that we all do. So from now on, I'm going to give you a second and a half to reply if you don't bless. So this is all about being conscious. So when I'm doing my talk, I have to be conscious of everything. And so when someone sneezes, I have to be present to that sneeze. And that's the way I train myself, to be present to what's happening in my moment, is because if I let the normal kind of just go as normal, then I'm not paying attention to what's unpredictable and what lives outside of my old self. I have to be present to what is unpredictable. All right, anyway. All right, I think we're time for this, almost. Okay, so the antidote, obviously, is to flip this, to be, do, have, instead of have, do, be. So the idea is that if the problem is that I let what I am having inform me with respect to my own worth, if that's the problem, then we need to reverse it, right? We need to take our own worth, I'm worthy, I'm good enough, and I'm going to bring that energetic understanding, that state of being, which is really a felt state. It's, you can't have a state of being without a feeling. And so what is the greater state of being that I can bring to my sense of not enough or my inadequacy or my unworthiness? I bring that state of being to whatever it is that I'm having, and then I ask my heart, what is mine to do in the presence of this that I'm having in the context of this feeling of gratitude? And I wait for my heart to reply. And then I do it. Okay, so that's the practice. All right, so here's the last closing video, and we'll see. Okay, lights, camera, action. Ooh. All right, so thank you very much for your attention. And so next week I'm speaking again, and we'll see where this goes next. Thank you so much.
And you never know where.